All right. What's up, Inside Edgers? How you doing today? This is Michael Ray Newman once again here on the Inside Edge. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm here, as always, with the one and only Monster Millennial.
How's it going, man? Good to see you.
It's good to be seen. Always good in here, man. We've got this thing rolling. We got the pump primed, and they're coming out.
I love it.
Yeah, we're having a ton of fun here, guys. We really appreciate all the great feedback we've been getting. Please like and share the Inside Edge. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, podcast,
SoundCloud.
There you go. That's what it is. SoundCloud, Facebook, Instagram. Anywhere you guys can share it, that'd be great. Also, comment on it. Shoot us your questions. We'll definitely be going live and figuring that out. I mean, I've had a ton of fun, and I've had a lot of really good responses on the street, man. People coming up to me, thanks, but you're doing a good job. So.
That's awesome.
It always feels good when somebody says something good about you, right?
A little recognition is never hurt anybody.
See something, say something. Some people may like it. So I might be a little bit strong for some, just like I told you before, my brothers tell me. A little bit of me goes a long way. You found that out.
I'm pretty sure I have a clip of that exact exchange.
You have an outtake of that. Man, I was just thinking this week, I've been looking, and I got to officiate my very first wedding.
Oh, congratulations.
Hey, bucket list, baby. I got to check.
Why was that on your bucket list?
I don't know. I just wanted to do that. That's crazy. So I am certified by the Universal Life Church and online. Anything you need, let me know.
Very nice. I will.
It was really cool, man. I had a good time, and I was very grateful that it, and I had a ton of... had this chance to see a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a long time. It was a kid that I used to coach named Josh Allen. He was a killer player since 5 years old. Now he's like 26. He came to me about a year ago, you know, several months ago, and said, "Hey, coach, would you marry us?" And I was like, "Dude, are you kidding me?"
That's got to be, yeah.
Yeah. So I did.
That's awesome, man.
I did charge him $1. And he asked me how much.
A buck.
But it was really cool. It broke my comfort zone. Did a lot of stuff that I already educated and validated on, man. It was just really fun to go through those kind of journeys and have those things happen to you in life.
So, that upset your status quo a little?
I definitely upset my status quo. I had to take an in-depth look at what it looked like to be in that position from that seat, which is really cool. So anyway, man, I want to get into a couple of cool things today. Do you remember what were you doing from 10 years old to like back it all the way down to when you first could remember your first memory? What was your very first memory in life? We don't talk about it.
I don't know.
I know I just blow you away when I say
you,
that.
You do, man. I'm never prepared for these, just so people know.
Yeah, we don't rehearse this, as you can tell. Yeah, the very first memory in life, and I met with an old boy one time. My buddy David Wright introduced me to a guy named Bob Beale. Now, Bob Beale says something like, I can't remember his whole shtick, but it was like, you know everything you need to know by the time you're 10. I've learned everything I need to know in life by the time I was 10. And he walked me through like what it was like in my house, playground, was I the oldest, youngest, middle child, teachers, coaches. And it was really neat. I spent an afternoon with the old boy. But that was like a casual glance. So he got up on the whiteboard, drew this timeline, and it was pretty cool. But I backed it up and I said, okay, I took an in-depth look. Did I really learn everything I needed to know in my whole entire life by the time I was 10? And I was like, well, I've got some stories in business and me personally, and I kind of think maybe that's true. The very first memory of me in business was the lemonade stand. Did I tell you about my lemonade stand?
I think I have heard about this,
man,
which
dude,
is a...
I was coming home from, we were coming home from Menards. We were going down Acton Avenue, and we were going over those humps, and I was in the back seat of the car, and I was looking out the back, and these kids had this really fancy lemonade machine or stand. It was like the one that had the awning over the top for shade, and it had lemonade with the L backwards. And
that's a real deal.
It was, man. It was a real deal. It was a little rascals
that's
looking.
That's impressive, man.
Yeah, they had the lemon stacked up. Well, I told my little brother Bruce at that time, and I was 6, and he was 4 or 5. And I said, we're doing the lemonade stand as soon as we get home. So as soon as we got home, we hustled into the house. Now, we didn't have a nice glass pitcher. We didn't have lemonades, but we had some Kool-Aid. And I jumped up on the counter.
That'll work.
That's right. I got the water. I got the Kool-Aid. I got the 2 scoops of sugar. And then we had these things. Back in the day, I know you Monster Millennial won't probably know this, but we had ice trays. No ice maker.
I remember those.
Come on now. You know, you had to
Absolutely.
Twist it and then fill it back up and stick it back in. So we got the big tubware thing, and we got the card table, and we got the 5-gallon bucket, and we got the Kool-Aid made, and I had these little Dixie cups. You know the ones you get like in your bathroom that you used to rinse
them
out with?
Yeah, exactly. Like you go in the bathroom at the dentist's office with the mouthwash, right.
The stack. So we had all that. We were set up, bro. It was looking good. We didn't have the awning in the shade, but it was August, and it was Texas, and it was hot. So we get to the corner, the end of the cul-de-sac, and we set up shop. Bruce is there and I'm there. Just you can imagine in your mind's eye, think about these little cotton top kids, man. We had blonde hair. We had no shirt, no shoes. We had these cut-off short Daisy Duke blue jeans on, 6 and 4 or 5 years old, and we were out there just dying. So in about an hour and a half, the ice melted. We drank all of our product, and we had to go back in the house. So we didn't sell one thing. Our product was gone, so we had to wait till the ice froze back in the ice chest. So we're going to have to flip the script. And in business today, I do this still today. I flip the script. I come in and look at business a different way. I try to do things. I make my competitors cringe. I love to make them their mouth drop and think, this guy's an idiot. Oh, there's no way that's going to work. That's going to cost him money. He's going to go out of business. And I can give you some real-world examples how I've used that in the past and how I use it even today. So what we did was flip the script. We went back in. We made another thing of cherry Kool-Aid this time instead of the grape. We got it all done. And I said, here, I gave Bruce the big old Tupperware bucket. He was just holding it with both arms. I dumped all the ice in it. He had the ice. I carried the Kool-Aid jug. I took the Dixie cups and smashed them in two and stuck them in my back pocket. And we didn't go sit on the corner. We started knocking on doors. Flipped the script, baby.
That's aggressive.
Yeah. So yeah, at that age.
That's very impressive.
So some barefoot, cotton top kids, blue jean Daisy Dukes, knocking on doors. And let me tell you something, 100% sales. Every person that answers the door, and we went from a nickel sitting on the corner to charging 25 cents. And here's how it went. So a lady would answer the door, oh, you guys are so cute. We're selling Kool-Aid. Would you like some Kool-Aid? She goes, sure would. So I'd pull the Dixie cup out of my back pocket that was smushed in half. I would open it up. I'd blow in it, right? So it would open back up. I reached it back there to my brother, who would take his dirty little hand and get two things of ice, drop it in the Kool-Aid deal. I would pour the Kool-Aid, pour it all over my hand, and then reach up and hand it to this lady. And she would hand me a quarter and take her little Kool-Aid with two fingers and say, thank you, boys. And so we sold Kool-Aid up and down the street. It worked great for about two blocks.
Yeah, your ambition far exceeded your talent in this one.
Yes, it did. Well, it worked great for two blocks, and here's what happened. Loretta Lyles called my mom up and said, you know, you got two boys walking up and down the street selling Kool-Aid. And my mom, then you remember, I don't know if you remember this, but if you could hear my mom from like blocks away, Michael Ray, Bruce, and as soon as we heard that, it was over.
But I also remember what your mom told you about after football tryouts.
That's right.
So, I mean.
That also happened to me when, too. That's another thing that happened to me. But I got in trouble that day for, you know, taking my little brother around town, but we made money. So we flipped the script. We looked at things a different way. And we've done that in business. My brothers, both of that one and my younger one, we have done that in business. I had a little dry cleaners one time. And we sold it a couple years ago, but the dry cleaners, most dry cleaners you go into, they're kind of dingy, they're hot sometimes, and they're always not responsible for. You have to sign off for things. So we flipped the script in our little area, bought this little dry cleaners. It's a pickup station, and there's a word free 11 times when you walk in. If you look for it, there's a word free 11 times, and it smells good. We got the little incense, what's that stuff called that people sell? The smell good stuff, you plug it in and it melts it and it smells real good.
Potpourri?
Yeah, no, not potpourri. No, that's what I was thinking. It's some other thing they're selling, but it smells really good in there, trust me. So you got that and we got the word free. We have free water, free donuts in the morning, free coffee, free drop-off, free pickup, free buttons
sewn
on.
That's how you paint
on.
The house, man. That's,
yeah, and everybody was like, there's no way. And all the other dry cleaners, you can't give stuff away free. You got to charge for buttons. You know, people charge $1 or $2 for a button. We don't charge it. If you said that we messed something up, I said, okay, let's get online. What's it worth? We'll pay you for it. I had one person in like 7 years try to get over it.
Ever try to, yeah.
Yeah, only one person. So people are pretty, and then a lot of times they'll take store credit. Or that was old anyway, don't worry about it. So we just ran business. We try to really put it and make our customers, you know, their eyebrows raise up and we make our competitors cringe, and that's flipping the script. And we did that. I learned that at 6 years old. And then I'm 7 years old. I come in and I go to school, and this is when I was reading. You know how I used to read in school? They'd say, okay, everyone has to read a book, right?
Yep.
So the teacher one day said, you got to read a paragraph in
like
a book.
Like you go around the class and each person
read out loud.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I hate that.
You've heard that, right?
Always hated that.
So I was, the first day, I was all Mr. Outgoing. So we got to me the first day, and turns out I got to my part and I read it and I stumbled and stammered through it, kind of like I'm doing right now. And Miss Ridley pulls me up to the front of the room and she says, Michael, read that again. And then I read it again, and I stumbled and stammered again. And then she grabbed that book, slapped it out of my hand, reached up, took it from me. And she goes, I swear, son, you're as dumb as a box of rocks. Go sit down. From then on, for the rest of my life, what do you think I was when I walked into the school?
Dumb as box of rocks?
Any school. And how do you think I was, what kind of reader I was? Not good at all. I mean, it got to the point.
That leaves a lasting impact, man.
It was a terrifying heart attack feeling moment every time we're going to all take a paragraph and read today. What it did teach me, it taught me how to sit by the smartest girl in class. It taught me how to communicate. It taught me, I could tell you if a teacher was lazy. I could tell you if a teacher wasn't really engaged or if they were engaged. And I cheated my way through school because I was dumb as a button. It turns out I have dyslexia, which is really dysgraphia. It's a whole little thing. And my son has that now. But that happened at 7 years old, man. And then when I was back on the business thing, my dad comes up to me one time when I was 9 or 10. I think it was 9, about to be 10 at summer. And he said, I'm going to tell you something, boys. We're going to buy you one pair of shoes, not cleats, not school shoes. And you're going to have to earn the money this summer to get your other pair of shoes. And I was like, All right. He walks off and says, you got to do that. And I was like, okay.
So Challenge accepted.
That's right. I started looking around, how are we going to make some money? So I got in the garage. I pulled the lawnmower out, pulled the gas can out, filled it up, and I started walking up and down the same streets that I sold Kool-Aid on. And I started knocking on doors. And I said, I'll mow your front yard for $5. I went, oh, you know, I don't know why I didn't mow the back. I just thought it was easier to mow the front. Well, I came home that first day, and I gave my dad $35. He grabbed it out of my hand and said, boy, where'd you get that $35 from? And I said, I got it from mowing yards. He said, whose lawnmower do you use? I said, mine. Whose
gas?
Whose gas do you use? I said, yours. You know what? He took $5.
I was going to say, what's a little taste?
He took $5, gave me the 30. But guess what that taught me?
Cost of doing business.
That's right, baby. There is a cost to doing business. And he, you know what he did? He filled my gas tank back, my tank up for me all summer. At the end of the summer, we went on the very first vacation we had ever went on. And I was giving my money to my mom. She kept putting it in the bank for me. Well, the day that we were leaving, it was in a camper trailer. You know, it was just an old Ford light blue Chevy truck. And my dad bought a camper.
Had the shell on there?
Yeah, he put the shell on it. No air conditioner in the back. Put two lawn chairs in it. And said, you boys sit here. And we took off running. I know exactly how many licks it takes to get to the bottom of the pit spot. Because going from Dallas, Texas, all the way to Austin and then San Antonio. So we were on the back with no air conditioner, sliding around, just unsecured lawn chairs. But I told my mom, I said, I want all my money in $1 bills. Man, I had a thick cash, about 3 inches thick.
What, you want to make it rain?
And I sure did, but I didn't know that at the time. But I went and bought it. First thing I bought was one of those leather wallets at the truck stop, and I was sitting sideways the whole time. It was hilarious. But that right there taught, not only did I buy my shoes, I bought a pair of tough skins and everything else. So it taught me, how to do business. And that was before 10 as well. And when you talk about, you were saying a while ago, all I wanted to do is play football, right? Before 10 again. Remember, this all happened to me before 10. This is right. I want to play football. That's all I want to do. Anybody listen to me, I want to play football when I get older. That's all I wanted to do. Well, when I was 6 years old, I was just turning 7. I got a flyer, ran home to my mom, said, I want to play football. Here it is. And she says, oh, okay. Talk to your dad. Talk to my dad. And my dad knew I was one of these ADD kids. Like, oh, well, the tryouts aren't until next week anyway, so come back to me next Friday, and we'll see if you're going to play. Well, I slept with that sucker right under my pillow, man. I was all about it. My dad shows up the next door. He used to get home at 3:30 from General Motors working the day shift. He was working nights and days, and he had just gotten to days. So I hit him right when he hit the front door, and I said, come on, let's go sign up. He said, hang on a second. And he goes over to my mom, and they kind of huddled up and went back and forth, and he came back and goes, okay, I'm going to let you play. And just a little side note, I was the runt of the litter, okay? So this is something that they were really concerned with me playing. I didn't know this till later.
Well, that seems surprising so looking at you now.
Yeah, I'm a late bloomer. I'm a little slow, but when I get it, I get it. So he goes, all right, I'm going to let you go play, but here's the deal. Just think about when you're under 10 and lessons that I'm learning right now through all of this. I'm not even 10 yet. I think most people are like this. He said, I'm going to let you play, but you can't quit. You understand me? It's going to be hot some days. It's going to be cold some days. Some days you're not going to want to go to practice because you're tired after school, but you can't quit. You have to finish the season. He said, besides, at the end of the season and you finish and you decide you don't want to play anymore, that's not quitting. That's retiring.
That's true.
That's right. So 7 years old, I was like, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So we jumped in the truck. We went up to the sign-ups. Coach Nick Sisti was there. And he walks up to my dad. And I don't know if you remember that. Do you remember the first time you really felt rage? And you were like really mad, pissed off. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
First time. Yeah. Well, it was when I was 7. Coach Sisti looks around my dad and he says, he looks like he's a little bit small to play. You might want to bring him back next year. And that's my dad turns around and looks at me. And it starts right here at the lower part of your back. It goes up your back. It's an instant sweat. It goes over your head and it goes into your eyeballs and your eyeballs swell up and you almost start crying. But you're not crying because you're sad. You're crying because you're pissed.
Yeah.
You're upset, right?
That's not crying. That's your eyes watering.
Yeah, my eyes were like raging. I was like, oh, man. My dad looked at me. He must have recognized my look. He turned around. He said, the boy, his birth certificate is old, says he's old enough. Here's my check. We're going to play. Now, remember, this is before we had phones and text messaging and paging or anything like that. So my mom had no idea. She was just very hopeful. She knew how excited I was. So we were going home in the truck. As soon as we got home, I jumped out of the truck and I was hustling into the house. And we had a really small house. And my mom was doing dishes at the sink. And she didn't even look up. She looks at me and says, hey, what happened? How'd it go? Well, I stopped, turned around, looked at her. I paused, took a deep breath. She never looked up this whole time. She kept washing dishes. Maybe she could feel it. I mean, this, and you're talking about wisdom that's about to come from a 16-year-old high school dropout, got pregnant at 16, and they started their life together because of me, right? I was the guy. The surprise.
The catalyst, sir.
But they were together, and she's like this young little girl. Nobody would expect to have any great wisdom. And I said, the coach told me I was too small to play. She said, what do you think? And I paused for a minute. She upset my status quo, right? I paused and I was like, I think he's wrong. She didn't even flinch. She kept washing dishes. And all she said was, that's all that matters. That's all that matters. Think about how powerful a statement that was, not just to a 7-year-old, to anybody.
Yeah.
What do you think? All this noise comes at us all the time, every day. People that say you have an idea, you share it with, they're gonna dog it, knock you down, what they think and what you can't think you can do, what you can't do. People laugh at you, people like cringe at you, people psh, you a lot of time. What do you think? You know what she did from there? And I asked her just about 4 or 5 years ago. I said, do you remember that story? When I started telling that story from in front of the stage, she goes, oh, I remember that. I said, what did you think? She goes, I thought that coach was right.
He was right. She can't tell
you were
you
too
that.
Small, and you were my baby. And what she wanted to say and she did not say was, that's okay, honey. He's right. We'll find something else for you to do. Think about parents today, the helicopter parents, the lawnmower parents. I'm one of them, right? I mean, it's hard not to protect your baby. But she let me go ahead and put myself out there. And what I did was, and she called back on that moment several times in my life, because that season I was like the little mascot. I was a pulling guard and I was like the ankle biter. I was the toughest kid on the team, they said, and got all these, I played and was competitive, right? And my mom would look back on that time when I was 10, 12, 14, 20, to when I got my girlfriend pregnant too. She says, you remember that? You remember what you did? You proved them wrong. If it is to be, it's up to me. She said, what do you think? And so she called back on that moment. And what would that have done to me if she would have pulled in and said, don't worry about it, we'll find something else? That would destroy
the impact on your life trajectory of that one very small moment could have been huge.
I call back on that moment to this day. I have. I call back on flipping the script on spilling the Kool-Aid. My dad was one of these oughta guys, right? My dad, so boy, son, I was always by his side, right? Everywhere we went, I was right there in the truck. He worked nights and he'd get up and my mom would be working and he'd take care of me and let me run around or whatever. And I'd say, he'd be like, son, somebody ought to go start mowing these yards. Somebody ought to take that apartment complex and start this. Somebody ought to open up a bowling alley over here in DeSoto. Somebody ought to do this. He was one of those oughta guys, right? So he was like, you can do anything you want if you want to put your mind to it. My dad would say, you can do anything you want if you're willing to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Think about that right there. Be comfortable being uncomfortable. He didn't say those words, but he said, if you're willing to put in the pain, and you're going to put in the work, and you're going to put in the time, good things will come of it, but you're going to have to be willing to get knocked in the mouth and get up and go again. That's what he said to me. That's stuff he was saying back then. A combination of me being successful selling Kool-Aid, me being successful mowing yards, my mom telling me, what do you think? That's really all that matters. I was lucky to have those parents. A lot of people don't have that and can't do those things. But he told me that when we were growing up, and the day that he had the opportunity to take his shot, he had the opportunity to open up this bowling alley. And he was going to borrow enough money from the bank to pay his salary for 2 years, all the benefits and everything. He had a great job at General Motors. We lived in a little 1,200 square foot home. We had benefits, man. We had a dishwasher. It was awesome. It was great. We had all the cool stuff that we had that he didn't have growing up. Well, I was bugging him. Come on, Dad, we're going to do it. We got to do it. I kept tugging on his shirt until he finally looked at me and says, get out. We ain't doing it. And he really just said, get the hell out of my face. And I remember at 12, 14, walking on the front porch at 10 years old. And I told myself at that time, I will always take the shot. I will always take the shot. Now, my dad told me I ought to do this, ought to do that, and then he wasn't doing it. Does that make my dad a failure? Does that make my dad full of BS? No. We want to give our kids and our family better than what? Better than we had.
Boom, we, yep.
That's right. Well, look what my dad had already done. I know I was living in a little 1,200 square foot house, 3-bedroom, but it had 2 baths and they were indoor. The only thing my dad remembers about his dad is beating the hell out of his mom and his 2 older brothers pulling him off. My dad had no indoor plumbing. My dad remembers having his mom bring home government cheese, having them eat out of the garden, not having enough to eat. My dad had already done better. He'd already given me better. And not to mention, he had me, my brother, and one on the way. And he had benefits, and he was had a great job, better than anything. They were born in, I was born in West Texas, and that's where they were raised. There was like 97 people in the town, and the cost of living was just the family in household income was just above or just below the poverty line, depending on the price of oil that day. He moved us out. When he moved us to Oak Cliff, Texas, he was busting flats, pumping gas, and cleaning the toilets in the old mobile building downtown Dallas. So he did whatever it took to have a better life for give us a better life, and he did that already.
Well, that's success then.
That is success, and that's we talk about success and significance a lot, because success, what is it to you? What is it to me? I mean, my dad's very successful. My dad and my mom are the reason I've been successful. They're the ones that gave me that when I was young. They poured into me when I was young. And think about this. How many times we get caught up in our own life? We get caught up in the stress of the job, stress of, holy cow, I've got to get married in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah.
And then you just run, because it's all about me most of the time. Because when you're going from survival mode to stability, from stability to success, from success to significance, what you do the whole time from up to success, you're trying to help yourself be, do, and have more. We get caught up and we get run over. A little girl gets her heart broken for the first time. And the first thing that you want to say, or her mom says, or her dad says, don't worry about it. 2 weeks, you won't even think about that anymore. You don't know what real pain is. Wait till you have to start paying the light bill. I mean, that's right, right? Those are things that happen. But really, that's huge in their life. When I was 7, when I was 9, when I was 10, that was everything to me, because that's my whole world. That's all I knew. Well, my mom took those obstacles, and my dad did, and they turned them into stepping stones. So my dad, when I was 10 years old, super impactful in my life, my dad turns around and hands me a book, and the name of the book is called Heart of a Champion. My dad didn't know I couldn't read. He said, read this book, boy, and he highlighted a few stories. The only story I remember a couple of them. One of them is the 4-minute mile. It was impossible to run a 4-minute mile. If you ran a 4-minute mile, it was Bob Bannister. He said, I'm gonna run the 4-minute mile. And it was impossible. Your heart will explode. The doctor said you can't do it. It is humanly impossible to run a 4-minute mile. Well, he trained, he did it, and you know, Bob didn't listen to the skeptics. There's tons of people that tried it over time. No one's been able to do it. Well, Bob trained for it and he wound up breaking the 4-minute mile, bottom line. But there was some really inspiring stories in that book. But when my dad was handing me a book saying, this book is named Heart of a Champion, I think you should read it, Dad. He didn't know I had dyslexia. He couldn't really hard to read anything. But he was telling me what? You have the heart of a champion, son. That's what you have. And all the things that had happened to me up to that point, too small, dumb as a box of rocks. And I never told my parents that story till just like 5 or 6 years ago, because they thought I was great. I didn't want to tell them that I'm really dumb. So I had to cover it up and cheat. And there was a lot of failures in my life. And there was many, many times that other coaches said, you're too small. There's many times that I had my heart broken. There's many times that I did skin my knee and I didn't go to my parents. I figured it out on my own. But those little things, before I was 10, Bob Beal said, before you're 10, you know everything you need to know. Those things right there really shaped me and molded me. And not to mention when I was 10 years old, because if the church doors were open when I was growing up, my mama had me there. When I was 10 years old, I accepted Jesus into my heart too. So I knew then, no matter how much of a failure I would be, except for my dad telling me, son, you're a Newman. Your last name's Newman. Yeah. No matter how old you get, brother, no matter how bad a day you had, then tomorrow when you get up, you're going to be a new man. New chances, new ideas, new opportunities. You can do anything you want. And I knew then, when I accepted Jesus, that I would never have to walk alone if I wanted to lean back into Him. And that's what I've done. So think about that. 10 years old, all the way up to 10, from 5 to 10, man, just that alone is impactful. We've got to reach back. We are designed for accomplishment, engineered for success. You are endowed with the seeds of greatness. It's up to you to cultivate those seeds within yourself and within your children. We've got to take the time. If you see something, say something. Pour into yourself, pour into other people. Because if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of other people. You picking up what I'm putting down, brother? Thank you guys for listening to The Inside Edge. This is me, Michael Ray Newman, Kevin E. I want y'all to go out and listen. Please comment. Please make ask questions. Please share this. Tell your friends about it. And because the inside edge is super, super important to me. And remember, be nice above all else, because people won't always remember what you say, but they always remember how you made them feel. We'll see you next time. Next week. See ya.